16, Revelation chapter 13. I think I've mentioned on different occasions, if not publicly, then privately to many of you, regarding a dear gentleman by the name of Archie Naismith. He was the father of Dr. James Naismith of Canada, and some of you may have heard minister the word. Archie Naismith served the Lord for many years in India. And recently, for the last 2 or 3 years, he's been in a convalescent home, or retirement home, whatever you like to call it. He's been suffering. Both his legs were amputated. And just wheeled around in a chair, you know. And we just got word today that he died about 2 weeks ago. He's gone home to be with the Lord. His wife died a few years ago, and he's buried beside her now. I don't know exactly his age, but he must be a good age, because I looked upon him as being quite an old man when I was just a young fellow. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's over 90 years of age. Served the Lord well for many, many years in India, in what was called the Godavari district of India. And he really ran a school there. He was an MA teacher. Went out there and he had a school for Indian children, so on, missionary for years, gone to be with the Lord. Now, when you hear of some of these men going, one here, one there, another one coming to the age where he's not able to preach. I told you about Harold German, who preached for us here. Harold hasn't been able to preach now for a good few years. His memory just went all of a sudden on. He was on a platform one night preaching, he had to stop. Couldn't remember what he wanted to say. And that was it. So he's been in a retirement home now for some years. And even if you write to him now, he can't answer you back. A lady who looks after the place has got to do his writing for him. Now, when you hear of some of those men who used to serve the Lord, not able now, and others have gone home to the reward, I feel that we should remember what the Lord said. Pray ye the Lord of the harvest, that he may send forth laborers. I feel, brethren, there's a great need these days for laborers. It's a need for young men to give themselves to the word with an exercise of doing the work. So make that part of your prayer. Pray ye the Lord of the harvest, that he may send forth, thrust forth, laborers. Now let's go to chapter 13 of Revelation. We got as far as verse 10. Now we'll start at verse 11 tonight. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb. He spake as a dragon, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. He had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. He causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in the right hand or in the forehead, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. I'm sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of the chapter. We pointed out when we were dealing with the first 10 verses, how that this chapter sets before us an all-out effort by Satan himself in order to defeat the purposes and the program of God. I feel that needs to be emphasized, understroked, that Satan has always been opposed to the purposes of God ever since his fall, ever since he aspired to be greater than the throne of God, set himself against God. And setting himself against God, in effect it was, I'll not submit to God. I'll be as great as God, or I'll be even greater than God. He fell. The Lord said, you saw him fall as lightning from heaven, just a flash. And you know and I know that Satan has been opposed to God ever since. And Satan doesn't work alone. Satan has many forces on his side. It's obvious that he dragged many with him when he fell. He didn't oppose God alone. Many angels were behind him because he was the chiefest of them. He was the cherub that covered. And then, of course, you know that when man was placed on this earth, then he made man the target. And ever since, whenever it was revealed what God's plan or purpose was, Satan lodged his attack. But I always go back to Genesis 3:15, where we learn this. This seems to be one of the first predictions in the Bible. The seed of the woman would bruise the head of the serpent. Of course, we know what happened at Calvary. But here, when you come to the book of the Revelation, Satan is still busy. We learn this, that knowing that his time is short, there's much longer to go. And in chapter 12, we saw how he launched his attack on the woman that brought forth the man-child, and on the seed or the remnant of the woman. The coming day, perhaps not far distant from now, he'll launch that attack upon the remnant of Israel. Here, when you come to chapter 13, there's an interesting thing now. There are two beasts. I said to you last week, don't come and ask me which of those two beasts is Antichrist. I don't know. But I do know this, that both of them are Antichrist. That means both of them are against Christ. But one of them will place himself up as being Christ. You may think it's one, somebody else may think it's another. But that title or term, Antichrist, is not used in Revelation 13. We read here of the first beast and another beast. Now it's a strange thing, it's obvious that the first one mentioned here is a political man. And he is leading in the area of politics. But when you come to this second beast, it's obvious that his role is the leader of that which is religious, as we'll see in a moment. The reason I'm mentioning that now, here you have a coalition of the political thing with the religious thing. So you have the political leader and the religious leader joining forces with one common purpose. That is to overthrow the purposes of God relative to his people who are on earth at that time. Not the church now. Church has been translated, did you remember, at the end of chapter 3. But God is a people on earth at this time. The remnant of Israel will be here, waiting for the Messiah to come. They are going to bear a testimony for his name. And this opposition will be against them. Now it's a very interesting thing. At this particular point, when these two men will have all this influence and all this power in the world, is just prior to God intervening. By the time you come to chapter 19, the Lord comes forth in all his power and in all his glory. He'll deal with his enemies. And then he will establish Israel in the land. Now, at the present time, it's not God who has established them in the land. In God's permissive will, they're there. They've gone back. But it is not God who has established them in the land at the present time. They are there in unbelief. The present time, Jews do not believe that Jesus was the Messiah. They've never repented of that awful deed of rejecting their king. As a nation, there's been no repentance. If a Jew, of course, as an individual repents and exercises faith in Jesus Christ, he's no longer reckoned a Jew. Just the same as you and I, when we get saved, we're no longer reckoned as Gentiles. The middle wall of partition is broken down and we're brought in as members of God's royal family. We're members of the church. We're Christians, put it that way. So that in the church there's neither Jew nor Gentile. We're all one in Christ. But when you come into the book of the Revelation here in chapter 13, this coalition of the great political leader and the religious leader will be opposed to that remnant of Israel. And the whole persecution will be leveled against them, called back in the Old Testament the time of Jacob's trouble. Now with that in mind, let your thoughts go back again to the Old Testament. Do you remember God delivered his people Israel out of Egypt? For 40 years they wandered in the wilderness from the time they were brought through the Red Sea before they passed over the River Jordan and went in to possess the land. 40 years. When the time had come for them to get ready to go into the land, do you remember when they were right on the borders of the land, there was a coalition set up against them. A great political man called Balaam. And you remember, he sent for a religious man called Balaam. Now Balaam was ultra-religious. There seemed to be something sinister about him. To begin with, you would almost think he had something of the fear of God in his heart. But then, as you consider the matter and you go into the details, you find he was an idolater. In fact, he was an astrologer. Man who worshipped the stars, the sun, the moon, and so on. Yet here's Balak, the political man. He sends for Balaam, the religious man. And he offers them money. He said, now what I want you to do is this, I want you to curse these people. But the strange thing was, you remember, Balaam couldn't curse them. God prevented him from doing that. But nevertheless, we learned, you remember, back in chapter 3, it was Balaam who taught Balak how to cast a stumbling block amongst the children of Israel. And when he would cast that stumbling block and cause them to commit fornication and cause them to worship idols, he says, God will curse them. You don't need to do it. God will do it. Just you cast the stumbling block there. And my point is, here was a coalition between Balak, who was the political man, Balaam, the religious man, combining their forces against the people of God. Here in chapter 13, the book of Revelation, as the time is drawing near for God to come out on behalf of his people and to overthrow his enemies and their enemies and establish them as a nation in the land. Here again, you've got a coalition. A coalition of the political leader and the religious leader. Both of them endeavoring to overthrow God's people. Now you'll remember when we dealt with the first beast, he came up out of the troubled sea. I pointed out that the troubled sea seemed to be indicative of this. The nations are like a troubled sea. And when the sea is in a storm, troubled, it casts up all its dirt and its filth and its mud. And that's exactly what the nations are beginning to do now. You talk about polluting the water. Polluting the sea as well. Maybe just around the coast just now, but they're polluting the water. Polluting the river. But that's not nearly so bad as polluting the people who make up the nations. We're living in a polluted age. The minds of the children are polluted before almost they're able to read. Things that you and I considered, if they were talked about at all, were only to be talked about in a whisper. They weren't given the headlines. Things that were hush-hush. Now they're out in the open. Headlines. Discussed freely. On the news. Or in the newspapers. You would almost think they were glorying it. It's like a tidbit to them to talk of these things. They're marching the streets today with their banners, declaring to the world what they are. Romans 1 said, glorying in their shame. And that's what we're seeing today. The nations are casting up all the filth and the rubbish. Out of that troubled mass, that first beast came forth, and he took, as it were, the place of prominence, and they were willing to go after him. But now when you come to this second beast, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, not out of the sea now, out of the earth. Now when you think of one coming out of the sea, that's the unformed mass, as it were, but now the second beast arising from the midst of that which is settled and formed and ready to accept the authority of the second beast. You remember Revelation 6, when the first seal was broken, the first rider that came out was on the white horse, saying, peace, peace. He settles them down. He's a man with a program. Oh yes, he's not as bad as he was painted. He'll be a good man. He's got a peace program. And he'll settle them down. But it won't be long after that, the man comes out on the red horse and he takes peace from the earth. But you see, this man here is coming out when everything seems to be settled, coming out from the land. But there's another point to it. When you think of the sea, referring to the nations, there's always one nation that stands out in contrast to the nation. That's the nation of Israel. They were the nation. The others, the nations, were the Gentiles. When you think of the land, you don't think of the United States. And you don't think of Australia. You don't think of Russia. When you talk of the land, you're talking of that little strip of territory that lies just away there at the eastern shores of the Mediterranean, commonly referred to as the Middle East or Palestine. This man is going to rise out of the land. It would seem that the first beast is going to arise out of the confederacy of nations in Europe. This man, the second beast, the religious leader, is going to arise in Palestine, the Middle East. In fact, let me let you in now to what I do believe, although I am not going to emphasize it. I do not believe that the Jews as a nation would accept anyone as their leader unless he himself can prove, as it were, his genealogy and prove that he himself is a Jew. They'll not accept a religious leader who is not one of themselves. And this man will be one of themselves. At least that's how I see it. Now look at the appearance of the beast. He has two horns like unto a lamb. But that's a pretext. That's a piece of hypocrisy. Because this is extremely deceptive. Because when he opens his mouth, he speaks like a dragon. Now you see, If you know anything about sheep and lambs, a little lamb wouldn't harm anybody. You never see a sheep fight. Or goats do some silly things, I know that, but sheep don't. You'll never see two sheep fighting. You might see a ram fight another ram, but not two ewes. You won't see two lambs fighting. And the lamb, when it gives its sound, oh, you can hear it on the hills, it'll travel, you can tell it's a lamb. You call it the bleat of the lamb. The bleat. It's not the roar of a lion. It's not the sound of a dragon. But this lamb here in appearance, he's only in appearance, he's got two horns like a lamb. But I say again, that's deceptive, because the moment he opens his mouth, he shows his true character. And his true character is that of a dragon. He speaks like a dragon. Now again, notice his authority. He exercises all the authority of the first beast. Now, where did the first beast get his authority? Now, there may be two ways in which you look at it. You may say, oh yes, men gave him his authority. They voted him into power. Or when he assumed the power, they said, yeah, we agree. That's looking at it from the human point of view. But remember this. He received his power and authority from the old dragon. From Satan himself. You say, well, has he power to has he the authority or the ability to give men that power? Of course he has. Remember what he said to the Lord himself in the temptation. If you'll only fall down and worship me, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. The Lord wasn't going to receive them like that. He was going to win them. They were his by right of creation, but he was also going to win them by right of redemption. He wasn't going to accept them by treason. He bowed down to the dragon. But here's a man coming out who's going to accept them. He's going to accept his power, and he's going to accept his authority from the dragon himself. And by doing this, notice what he's going to do. Verse 13 says, and he exercises all the power of the first beast before him, and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wounds was healed. You see, here's a man who brings in the religious thing. Of course you understand that all men are religious, whether they admit it or not. Communists are religious. Oh, they may boast and say, oh, no God for me, we don't believe it. Of course they have a God. The state is their God. They worship their state. They worship somebody, or they worship something. Man has got to be a creature of worship. He's got to worship something. And he's going to cause all the people on the earth, he commands universal religious idolatry. Not only will he cause them to worship the beast, go a little further than that. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he hath power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth, they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by the sword, and did live. You see how subtle the whole thing is. But Satan, the ability to give men power to do this. A lot of people today have been deceived by so-called miracles. Now let us face this, brothers and sisters. It is possible for even followers of the devil to perform miracles. See what happened down in Egypt when Moses and Aaron went in to persuade or try to persuade Pharaoh to let the people go. Why? The magicians of Egypt came on and they did their miracles. They give their signs. What about the man you read of in the Acts of the Apostles? Chapter 8. Who put himself up as being some great one. And the people were submitting to him because he was deceiving them with some kind of miracle. Here's a man that's yet to appear on the scene. Will deceive the people then. By his miracles, he'll even make fire come down from heaven. Well, you say, well, that's what Elijah did. That's true. He's the man who's going to imitate that. He's going to make fire come down from heaven. When you come to read about the two witnesses, why, of course, you read the two witnesses with the power to slay people. With fire. He is a man also, a worker of evil, who will have the power to do those miracles. And by these miracles, he's going to deceive the people. Deception in his sight. He'll make the signs and deceive them. Then there's corruption here in things religious. If they wouldn't bow down to God, and you know and I know, the scriptures teach, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God. Him only shalt thou serve. But here will come a time when these people will be prepared to bow down and worship the beast. Worse than that, they're going to worship an image of the beast. But it's bad enough to see people bowing down in front of wooden images and stone images. I could tell you some humorous stories about some of these, if it wasn't so serious. The fellow was unemployed. He went to the priest. His father, what might I do for a job? Well, he says, you'll have to bring the saint so-and-so. He says, can he give me a job? If you have to say to pray for if you want to employ. So over in the grotto, across the road, there were all those images. There was saint so-and-so and saint so-and-so. So he went there. He's reciting his prayers to the thing. He says, I want a job. You better give me a job. If you have none. And the priest heard them. He said, if you don't have me a job by tomorrow, at this is the time I'll come and I'll smash your head. The one priest said to the other, we better do something with this fellow. He needs living. So they had it removed and put a little limitation in its place. Sure enough, he was back the next day. They had them again. He'd been drinking again. He looked at the little thing that was there. He says, where's your father? He says, he was to get my job. He says, he better be here tomorrow. I want to see him. You see how stupid the whole thing can be? How stupid. Men that you would think were intelligent will go and bow down to stone images. I've seen them bow down to pictures. Bring it to the picture and put the money in the box. That's not clear to be answered. Well, here, intelligent people are going to bow down and they're going to worship that beast and they're going to worship the image of the beast. But worse than that, see what he's going to have the power to do. Verse 15. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that any, that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And you know, we're living in strange days. I don't suppose that when the time comes for that to happen, the folks will be surprised. Some strange things are happening today. It started off, you remember, with talking dolls for little girls. My, they were attractive. They were a talking doll. Fine. But you know how it happened. I know how it happened. But they've gone further than that now. They've got some of the strangest things happening today. But where they can bring the sun from. I don't know how he'll do this. The devil will give him the power, and his power to give life, breath, as it were. He'll give breath to the image of the beast. And the image will be held to speak. And by that means he's going to deceive the people. Corruption and things religious. And if they don't bow down and worship the image of the beast, they'll be destroyed. Ah, that takes your mind back to something else. What's this? At the time, way back in the book of Daniel, just at the time when the times of the Gentiles were introduced, do you remember the image that was set up? And when the band played, the music was heard, everybody was to bow down to that image of Nebuchadnezzar, but that's what it was. To bow down to that image. If you and I had been able to stand somewhere near and view that vast crowd of all kinds and classes that were brought there, all the rulers, governors, and all the rest of them, and they're all bowing down, except, there's three young men who wouldn't bow down. They refused to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's image that he set up. And when it comes time here at the end, when the image of the beast is set up, there will be those that will not bow down to it. And he'll cause that those that will not worship the image of the beast shall be killed. They'll be masters. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in the right hand or in the forehead. He'll have them all computerized by that time. Every one of them. They'll have the mark. And will not carry it in their pocket or in their wallet. Might lose it there. Somehow or other, it'll be put on your forehead or in your hand. And they'll contest you one way or another. They can look through it. Yes, you've got it all right. Some might be more blatant to put it up there and let it be seen by everybody. And if they don't have the mark, this is what he says, they'll neither be able to buy or sell except they have the mark. Of the name of the beast, of the number of his name. Not only is he going to control the religious life, he's going to cause that between him and the first beast, they're going to control all the economics of that day. They'll control the business life. They'll not be able to buy unless you've got his mark. Not be able to sell unless you've got his mark. Absolute control. You talk about dictatorship. The world has never seen dictatorship like this in time. The Spirit of God says, here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Remember the time I went over to the Middle East, some of them got all excited. Oh my. We saw a taxi cab there. The registration mark on the taxi cab was 666. Spoke to the guide about it. He says, yeah, you look at all the taxi cabs, they're all 666. Because that's their registration number. Some of the folks who knew their Bible got all excited when they saw this. But you know, I don't know how this will be counted. When the time comes, those that are here will be able to count it. And there's been a lot of speculation about it. I'm not so sure that it will be an actual 360s as we think of them. But there must be some meaning to it. You know, six is man's day. Man was created on the sixth day. Do you remember the measurements and the weights and the figures that were given with regards to Goliath? And his weight of his spear and so on. You look up Goliath. See how many sixes you find in Goliath. Six is man's number. And when you have six multiplied by three, I suggested, man has come at that point to the finality of all his progress, to the finality of all his opposition to God. He can go no further. He's reached finality. The best that man can offer. Before God comes in, he judges and takes those two, the beast and the false prophet, come to chapter 19, he cast them alive into the lake of fire. And the devil is bound and cast into the bottomless pit. You and I are on the winning side. Remember this old world is heading now for the worst possible times that has ever been known. Again, I remind you, Revelation 3, verses 10 to 11 prove to us the church will be translated. Again, our Father, we thank thee for an evening hour spent together. We've been looking at thy word. We've been praying to thee. Go with each of us now. Take us to our homes in safety. Very specially, remember those who are sick tonight. They need to know thy presence with them. Bless them, we humbly pray thee.